all for coming. It's really, really, really heartening to see everybody at such an hour. Free food also works its magic, but also the words of the tzaddiker put that together, and you've got a very big draw. So we're here celebrating, commemorating. There's a rebbe in my neighborhood, Rabbi Tversky, Rav Matal Tversky, and he says oftentimes that, you know, when you have a yahrzeit, you really get to visit the past. You get to visit with the tzaddik who walked through the world, and you get to sort of surf the waves that they made in this world. That's part of the idea of Mishnah Maseches Kala, why we say Kaddish. Initially was Baruch Hu, but we say Kaddish that somebody left behind, somebody who would say that Hashem's name should be great in the world. And the tzaddik, you know, as they pass into the world of truth, still everybody who's holding on to them by means of their deeds, by means of their attributes, by means of their teachings, they also can, you know, can chop Orion a little bit of an aliyah on the day of the yahrzeit. And when we celebrate the tzaddik, there's a tshuva in Minchas Alazar that people say chassidim don't say tachanun, but it's a misnomer. Different chassidim have different customs. But Minchas Alazar says the only way that you really not say tachanun on the tzaddik's yahrzeit is if you actually go to the tzaddik's keder and connect there. Learn their Torah, think about their actions, and allow their influence the world to influence you as well. And that so when we get together on a yahrzeit, we're sort of attaching that anybody, we're connecting with anyone who's yahrzeit, a family member who's yahrzeit, achas kama v'kama, tzaddik's yahrzeit, they have an aliyah by means of the brachas that we make and by means of the fact that their Torah influences us and the Torah touches us and it lifts us up also even higher. So we're here to talk about Rav Avram Yitzchak ben Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Kook, the chief rabbi, our chief rabbi, the first chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. And really, there's just so much to say, especially, you know, this is Gimel El is also the day that he entered Yerushalayim Shalmata, when he entered the city of Yerushalayim when returning from the First World War. He came and entered Yerushalayim for the first time on Gimel El. And as well, so then he also went to Yerushalayim Shalmala, the heavenly Yerushalayim, on Gimel Elul as well.
It's written on his kever.
Yeah. So Rabbi Sviel is going to talk a little bit about the Toldos HaTzadik. What's it called? I'll give you a little bit of a running start. Don't worry. I'll give you a little bit of a running start first. He's going to talk about the life of the Tzadik a little bit first. But one idea that is a fantastic idea in the Ein Ayada in Shabbos, that we know that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai came to a city, whole of Yisrachas Anisa, whole of Avin Milsa, Metakin Milsa, that since a miracle happened for me after he was saved from the cave and the Romans and everything, he said, I'm going to go do something. He came to a certain city. And what happened in the city? Well, there was a path on the way to the marketplace, and it was a real problem because somebody went around burying bodies and they didn't mark them. And it's a real tzara for the Kohanim. They had to go all the way to get to the marketplace. There's a whole way around. The Yerushalmi tells us it's Tveria, and the song Bar Yochai, Tikin Esir Tveria, Ko Avir Martim Ko Lechai, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, says that he Tikin Esir Tveria. Right? So it's only the Yerushalmi, not the Bavli. But he went, and there are all these bodies everywhere. So Rabbi Shimon went, and he took sheets and water, was able to see where the ground was dug up, and was able to say, okay, this is where the tomb is. Rav Kook says, Neinaya, that one of the biggest problems in our life is Sefek Tumah. We think there's something wrong with us. Maybe there's something wrong with us. Maybe, sorry, it's tzedakah for most of us. We're walking around. But we walk around with this doubt of maybe I'm not okay. Maybe I'm not okay. And if we're not so frontal about it, so subconsciously it's there always. Maybe I'm not okay. Part of what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai came to the world to do was to reveal that, no, bevadai you're okay. Bevadai you're okay. To resolve any suffix tuma in your life. To say, no, Elokai neshama shenatatabi toharahi. No, your essence is pure. It's good. You're good. And Rav Kook with those same eyes, right? They said the same type of eyes of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Famously, we know the story, right? That one time they asked Rav Kook why he doesn't quote Rabbi Nachman, when very clearly that he's drawing from Rabbi Nachman. And he looked at them and he said, I am Rabbi Nachman. There's nothing to respond to that. And Rabbi Nachman, we know very clearly, said about himself, that his connection to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that's why the first Torah in the Sefer is about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's all to resolve that, to say, maybe I'm not okay. Rabbi Shimon, Rav Kook wants to say, Yudi Yakar, you're okay. Tabi said that. You're okay. The things we have to work out, but you're okay. Your root is holy. Nothing you can do can change that. Tap into that and you'll see how much you can rise. Tap into that energy and you'll see how much you can rise up. We'll talk more about it, but I promised the Rebbe Israel a running start. So with that, the life of the tzaddik.
I don't know if it's too much of a biography. There's some beautiful biographies out there written about him. When Rav Boshnak approached me a few days ago, about a week ago, so he's like, so what's going on over here for Rav Kook's yard site? And I, you know, awkwardly looked around and said, I don't think we've ever done anything. So if Rav Boshnak came to YU to be metaken Rav Kook's yard site, like Dayenu, you know, that's already So you might ask yourself, so what exactly, for a lot of us maybe the question is, who exactly is Rav Kook? I know growing up, I had never heard of him until I got to Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, and I went to Leib, so it's like the only thing I heard for like 2 years. But ask yourself, okay, so, you know, this Rav who lived in first half of the previous century, what exactly is the Shaychus? Maybe we've heard certain things about, you know, Rav Kook being very Eretz Yisrael oriented, and that, you know, and religious Zionism, and the father of religious Zionism, and you see his picture a lot in different places in Eretz Yisrael. What exactly does that have to do with me sitting here in Washington Heights and in Tufshin Pei Beis? I think one of the things that there's other segments of the Orthodox world, I think, I think every group has its milas and its chisronos. One of the big pluses that some of the other groups have over us is they've really made an art out of talking about the gedolim and tzaddikim. You know, you might say sometimes it's too much, but l'maisa, there's a certain mida of respecting gedolim and tzaddikim, of being familiar with their stories, of, you know, of living with the teachings of the tzaddik, of respecting and really putting the tzaddikim on a pedestal. And I think we sometimes, unfortunately, lack that in some of the communities that we're from. So I think if you understand a little bit about who Rav Kook was, and I'll just give a few basic, biographical pieces. But a lot of our hashkafa as a yeshiva, and a lot of the hashkafas, I think, of the communities that we come from, the shuls that we grew up in. I mean, maybe we have some random guy who grew up in Lakewood. I don't know. Every once in a while, we have a guy like that. I don't know. But derech klal, if we all grew up in the modern Orthodox communities, I think a lot of the life philosophy and the worldview was very much set by Rav Kook. And I'll explain how exactly that means, and I'm sure Rav Boshnak is going to talk about it even more in terms of which nekudas are relevant to us. But it's Rav Kook set the foundations for us, and Rav Kook is one of the gedolim of our world. So I think it's chaval that we should go, you know, years in yeshiva without really knowing who he is, and without understanding what his teachings were, and without understanding what values he brought to us. So, I don't know if I was going to say this originally, but I got a phone call from a friend of mine who saw the flyer for the event tonight. And he says to me, he's like, oh, okay, I see you're speaking tonight at an event. Let's this friend of mine, he's not necessarily from our circles, you know. He's a little bit more Oreo colored these days in terms of his personal hashkafa. And he called me like little, just banter around a little bit. And he's like, oh, so I heard you're speaking at this Rav Cook event tonight. And I could tell where he was going with like the, you know, with the tone of voice. And he's like, well, is it going to be very tzioni tonight? And I was like, I don't know what you're getting at right now. I don't know where you're going with this, but I'll tell you this. Who do you think? Oh, you're going to like this. So do you by any chance know who Rav Eliyashiv is? Was? And he says, well, Yashiv obviously is the Gadol Ador, the Posek Ador, the Posek of the Lithuanian world. You know, who doesn't know Rav Eliyashiv? I said, do you know who his Mesader Kedushin was? He's like, I have no idea. I said, Rav Cook was his Mesader Kedushin. So there's a silence on the other side of the line. And he's like, I wasn't aware. He's like, oh yeah. Do you know who was the Kohen who did the Pidyon HaBen for Shmuel Orbach? Shmuel Orbach being like the, you know, one of the big leaders of the, whatever, in Yerushalayim up until a few years ago. He's like, I don't know, who was it? Rav Cook. Rav Cook was not a person that was, he was not bound by any one hashkafa. We like to think today when we talk about Rav Cook, we say, you know, he was, you know, he's the father of religious Zionism, and, you know, and the people nowadays that follow Rav Cook is, but they're a cloud more in the Dati Lumi religious Zionist world in Eretz Yisrael, the world of the Hesder Yeshivas. And but if you look back at when Rav Cook was alive in the, I mean, he was nifter in the mid 1930s. He was born in the 1870s. Was nifter in the 1930s. Rav Cook would give a shalosh shudis drasha in Yerushalayim, and everyone, the entire upper, you know, the creme de la creme of the rabbinic world of Yerushalayim would come to hear his drasha osan shalosh shudis. And we have some of those drashos, but Rav Eliyashiv used to go, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach used to go, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, who was like the leader of, so to speak, the opposition to Rav Cook, would also come sometimes to, oh no, was it? I think it was a different time period, but a lot of the tzaddikim from across the spectrum, you know, you had people who at the time were the starters of Neturei Karta would also show up to the shir sometimes, meaning it was the full spectrum of, he lived in a time, and he was one of these people who, he lived in a time, first of all, when you could respectfully disagree with people, which is, I think, something that we've lost. You know, him and Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, who was the head of the, one of the head rabbis of the time in Eretz Yisrael, who had very opposing views on him in terms of just about every topic. But together they would go and they would travel together around the country to all the kibbutzim and all the yeshuvim and all the farmers and try to get them to keep Shemitah. Rav Cook was friends with, he spoke to the government officials. Rav Cook spoke to the, you know, the Neturei Karta. He spoke to, you know, all sorts of politicians, gedolim, all across the spectrum. He was writing letters to, he was constantly in contact with the Rebbeim in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Cook was a posek. You know, we have entire books full of his Piskei Halacha. He was a posek. He was a rav. He was a politician in a lot of ways. He was a philosopher. There's no area that Rav Cook wasn't good in. But I think just to hone in a little bit up in terms of what he means to us. Well, to go back to the point I said before, he was a person he was above all borders. Meaning, his father was Lithuanian. He learned in Volozhin. Rav Cook himself learned in Volozhin, but his mother's family was Chabad. So Rav Cook had this duality, and he happened to have loved Breslov, and he also said that he was Rabbi Nachman, so I don't know how that fits into the equation. An individual who cared, in his office, Ad Hayom Hazeh, if you ever go to his house, Beit HaRav, in Yerushalayim, you see that behind his desk he had two pictures. He had a picture of the Gra and a picture of the Baal HaTanya, that hashkafically and ideologically are two totally seemingly opposing figures in Jewish history, and he had both of them there. He was the definition of Achdus. His whole philosophy of integrating different, you know, bridging different gaps in Am Yisrael and viewing the unity in everything. I think Rav Bashnak will talk about that a little bit more. But there's a few, just a few ideas I think that are very relevant to us even now in America. When it's seemingly, like, if you live in America, that it must be that you didn't really take his teaching so seriously. He talks to every single one of his farm is about Eretz Yisrael. So if we're living here, so then what shaychus do we have to Rav Cook? So like I said before, I think a lot of the hashkafa of our yeshiva and a lot of the hashkafa of our communities have to do with him. So for example, I think most people in the room were in Eretz Yisrael for the yeshiva. I think most people. Is that a fair assumption to make? One year, 2 years, 3 years? Not everyone. Okay, not everyone. But maybe you've been, everyone probably has been to Eretz Yisrael at least. And if I had to take a guess, I would assume that some of the people in this room have at some point felt some type of deeper connection with Eretz Yisrael. Not just like, oh, it's so much fun, like Masada, you know, like kind of like past the birthright level of experiencing Eretz Yisrael, which again, birthright's beautiful and contributed to my religious experience in a lot of ways. But for anyone who has that deeper connection to Eretz Yisrael and who feels that, you know, when you're sitting here sometimes and you're just dreaming back to Yerushalayim, when you read the teachings of, you read some of the writings of Rav Kook, you realize, oh my gosh, like he's feeling the exact same thing that I feel. You read a line in Rav Kook describing the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and I don't know about you guys, if anyone really, take some time, try to find, if you can't read it in the original Hebrew, even to find a translation, it just resonates with, you hear a longing and a love of Eretz Yisrael, it's contagious. You know, even if it's been a long time since you were in Eretz Yisrael, you read some of these things and you're like, wow, he feels exactly what I felt. So I think that's something that, very often we leave Eretz Yisrael saying, you know, I want to head back, I want to go back. Rav Kook himself was stuck, he got stuck in Switzerland during World War I. He went out for a trip, he had a medical thing or fundraising.
And he did a convention.
He did a convention, even better, similar. And World War I started, they closed all the borders, and he got stuck there for 4 years. He was in Switzerland, he was in London, and the whole time he's writing about his yearning for Eretz Yisrael, and finally he was zochet to come back, I guess on Gimel Elul. And there's one of his teachings that for me has been one of the things that's kept me going ever since I moved back from Eretz Yisrael about 7 years ago. He says there's a famous statement in Chazal that Nevuah can only happen in Eretz Yisrael. So the famous question on that is, okay, that's nice, but what about Yechezkel? Yechezkel was, you know, one of the most important of all the Nevi'im, and we see that he was in Bavel the entire time he was receiving his Nevuah. So the answer that a few people give, but Rav Kook writes beautifully in Orot, he says if you look at the Nevuahs of Yechezkel, what were the Nevuahs of Yechezkel? The Nevuahs of Yechezkel were all about Bayis Shlishi, Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Kook says that when a person's whole thought is Eretz Yisrael and love of Eretz Yisrael, that so to speak, his Dalet Amos become a mini embassy of Eretz Yisrael. And for me, that's a thought that gives me tremendous chizuk, that even when we feel so distant, when, like the Baal Shem Tov says, we are where our thoughts are. So when we stop and we're thinking about, when we feel that yearning, we dream of Eretz Yisrael, but really, in a certain sense, we're in Eretz Yisrael. So I think that's a teaching that's very relevant. So there's a famous story with Rav Soloveitchik. Soloveitchik, on his one trip to Eretz Yisrael, he was traveling around, seeing different things. They brought him sightseeing. He was the only there one time in his whole life. And he was visiting one of these, like, socialist, communist, like, non-religious kibbutzim. I think it was Maskeret Batya, but I'm not sure. It was one of these places, the Gani or Maskeret Batya, one of these places. And they brought him some fruits. Is anyone familiar with the story? They brought him some fruits. And so he says, like, listen,
this is the throwing away the kingdom store.
Yeah, there it is. Okay. So they bring him fruits, and Rav Soloveitchik politely refuses. He says, listen, kashrus, you know, trumas, maestros, I can't really eat this. And I said, no, don't worry. We have a mashkiach that comes once a week and does tithing on all the fruits every single week. Don't worry. And Soloveitchik was a little bit surprised. This is like one of those like gung-ho, anti-religious, communist kibbutzim. So he asked him, he's like, I don't want to make, you know, presumptions here, but I'm it's a little bit surprising that you guys have trumos and maestros on the fruits that you're eating here. He said, actually, it's there's a story behind it. Really, I think it was like 50 years before, 60 years before, Rav Kook had once had shown up on an Erev Shabbos to visit the yeshuv, and he said he was staying for Shabbos. So he brought his Shabbos clothing, he brought his own bag of food, and Rav Kook, the head rabbi of Israel, came to this totally secular kibbutz, and they tried offering him food. He's like, no, don't worry, I have my own. He sat with them in the cafeteria of the kibbutz, and he ate his bread. He made kiddush. He ate his bread. everyone around him was eating, you know, whatever it is that they were eating at the time. And he sat there with them, and he forbrenged, and he spoke Torah, and he laughed with them, and they had an amazing time. But the next day, the same thing. He makes Kiddush, washes on a little loaf of challah, and benches, and then just sits there with the chevra, and they're just enjoying, they're talking, and he's sitting there with them. Shal Shittas, the same thing. Motzei Shabbos comes, and he does Avdallah, and he says, thank you so much for hosting me. They say, Rabbi, thank you so much for coming. It's a big honor for us. You know, please, please come again. He said, absolutely, I'd love to come again. And I hope that, Yirtzeh Hashem, next time I'm here, I'll be able to sit and eat from the cafeteria and from the same kitchen as you guys. And he smiled and he left. And apparently the next day, the people in the kibbutz, they threw out all the kalim, bought whole new ones, hashered the entire kitchen, without one word of rebuke, or without any judgment, or without any type of proselytizing, or any type, just his presence, his demeanor, the love that everyone felt from him, that was all that they needed to make a major life change. And I think that in the world that we're in, you know, I think sometimes we, you know, especially coming out of yeshivas, sometimes perhaps certain yeshivas, you know, we come back with like, you know, we're gonna makarav the world. That's not the mahalach. The mahalach is being a person of chen, being a person of chen, of love and acceptance, and by being yourself, that's what's going to bring people closer to. That's what's going to bring people closer to Yiddishkeit. And that was one of the big things that Rav Kook was known for. He was one of the first people, one of the first Rebbeim to ever speak about the importance of art and music. Up until then, it really wasn't, specifically art, was not something that was dealt with by the Rebbeim. Everyone was too busy with pogroms, and no one had time to think about this higher level of, you know, of art and culture. And he was the first one that spoke about, you know, how music was a tool for the soul, and how, and there's a famous story where he went to, he was in London, if I'm not mistaken, during those years that he was stuck out of Eretz Yisrael. And there's an exhibit of paintings of Rembrandt. If anyone's familiar with Rembrandt, I feel like we all know. Maybe, yes, no. So beautiful paintings, a lot of use of dark and light. And Rav Kook said, as a famous quote, he said there's certain people, he said when Hashem created light and dark in this world, and there's certain people that were endowed with the knowledge from Hashem of being able to understand and manipulate and recreate that dark and light that Hashem, that ore that Hashem hid during the first few days of creation, certain people have been able to tap into. He said the art of Rembrandt was capable of doing that. Now, for most of the Rebbeim of the time, they would have seen the art of Rembrandt and said, Goyishkeit, it's gurnisht, it's disgusting, it's goyish, get it out of here, you know, avoid the Zara. They would have dismissed it. But Rav Kook's perception was that, and I think Rav Bashnak will speak about this more later, is that he viewed the Kedusha and everything, and he viewed everything as part of a process of the world coming closer and closer to Mashiach. He didn't view art as this unnecessary pastime. He viewed it as a conduit and a means for a person to express his soul. And the same thing with his view on secular people. He said that it's, you know, a lot of there's a lot of fighting in Eretz Yisrael at the time in terms of secular people being viewed as the shegits, and they're destroying armies. They hate the Torah. They hate God. And Rav Kook said, no. Like, what, you know, these people who are getting so into socialism, all these isms, and exploring ideologies that are totally and contrary to Torah. He said, no, these aren't wicked, evil people. He said, these are people that are looking for something. Their soul is thirsting for something. They haven't been presented the Torah in the right way. So they're looking for other things. But really this desire and this intensity that they have in all these things, in secularism, it's really just coming from a drive for Ruchnius. And he saw the movement of secular Zionism as part of the process of rebuilding Eretz Yisrael. It was an ayin tov. It was a way of viewing the Kedusha and the potential in everything and everyone and every phenomena on a micro, on a macro level. I think for us, I know for me personally, one of the things just in terms of nowadays, you look at the news, and I'm to put it, you know, to put it lightly, I'm severely frustrated with a lot of the things you see in the news and in American culture, and I'm quick to come to judgment and say some harsh things about people, but when you look at things with Kook glasses, and you view and you see how he viewed the secular world, how he viewed art, how he viewed everything. There's a beauty behind it. Liberalism. He saw that, okay, it might have been misguided, but really it came from a place of wanting to make the world better. And it's such a beautiful perspective that I don't think we hear about nowadays. And trust me, I would say I'm far from liberal, but there's certain values that he speaks about that he's Dan Chavschus all of humanity. One of the quotes that that Rav Bashnak showed me earlier today is from Rav Meir Berlin, who I think was the father of Rav Chaim Berlin.
The son.
He was the son of Rav Chaim Berlin, the uncle, the nephew of.
He was the youngest son of the Netziv.
Of the Netziv.
Rav Chaim Berlin was the oldest son.
Right. So he had a quote here. It says Rav Kook loved the Jewish people the way only a father can love his children. Nobody is left after him who will love his nation that fearly. He understood his people, the situation of the generation, and its life conditions, and that's why he forgave them everything. So, and during the days of Elul, we're looking for a Melitz Yosher. We're looking for someone to be a Melitz for us, who's gonna put in a good word, so to speak, in front of the Ribono Shalom. I don't know if we have Gedolim who have that same Mida. Hashem, we should be zocher that the schus of the tzaddik and his yard side should be maor rachamim for us in Chodesh Elul. That learning the teachings of the tzaddik, whether now, today, or if anyone has curiosity to read more about it on their own, but the schus of the tzaddik should carry us through the month, and we should be zocher to celebrate in Yerushalayim and to live the teachings of Ahavas Yisrael that Rav Kook embodied.
So I wanted to take really 4 or 5 points that we can take from Rav Kook, Rav Kook's Torah, and really with this to be able to put in our pocket and move forward, because there's a lot of Rav Kook's Torah, and there's a lot out there, and our ability to connect to some of these points will enthuse us to look for more. Also give at the very, very end a reading list of entry points to some of Rav Kook's easier svarim. So the first we'll start with is that everything is ascending. Everything is ascending. They asked Rav Kook about the theory of evolution, and he said that the world is getting better. I can believe that. I can believe that the world is ascending. The world is getting better. Everything is coming in the process of ascent. Everything, the Jewish people's search for art, it's if we know about Maslow's triangle of needs, right? So we go from survival then to life, to look for art, to look for finer things. We also look at Rav Hirsch, where he talks about Tuval Kain also. He says that art aspires to bring man back to the nobility that man left when man parted ways with God in Gan Eden. They're looking for something. Looking for something more. Everything is ascending. The socialists, the Zionists, they're looking to do good by the Jews, and trying to concretize and do good for the Jews. They're looking for social reform. They're trying to make the world better. The problem is that they're missing it in our Torah, and that's where they're lost. In many of the letters, there's a very interesting exchange between Rav Kook and a Ger Chusid in Warsaw, Dov Milstein. And he's afraid. He doesn't know what to do. His children are leaving the derech. What should he do? They're going to becoming Zionists. They're becoming this. And Rav Kook says you have to connect with them, and praise them for what they're doing is good, and try to redirect them and show them that it's present in our Torah. Also, you don't have to look outside. It's in our Torah. Let's remember, everything is ascending. Everything is constantly ascending. Bet we are all seeking depth. We're all seeking depth. In his monumental essay, Hador, Rav Kook says, you know what's with our generation? Our generation, there's never been a generation like our generation. They're totally pure and totally impure. They're totally chayev and totally zakai, totally obligated and totally innocent. All at the same time, never has there been a generation like this. And what's the issue? Again, they're seeking depth. They're seeking depth behind everything that we're doing, the meaning, the tamei ha-mitzvos. And we have to be able to express this. And if we cannot express this, we're going to lose people. In the Megad Yerachim, Rav Kook wrote a Jew haiku for every month of the year, 3 times. 3 years running, it was printed in the yeshiva's fundraising calendar. That would be it. So for the Pigam for Tammuz, he says, Mibena mitzarim, Nigal ha'am al yidei morim, chamushe koach, she'enam tzarechim l'makel chuvlim. From amongst the straits, Bena Mitzarim, right, for 3 weeks, the nation will be redeemed through teachers armed with spirituality who don't need to use a stick to strike and make their point. Whether it's a physical stick or whether it's an emotional screaming, what's wrong with you, Shai gets stick. right? That if our teachers are trained properly, that they know Sisrei Torah, they know the Torah, the secrets of Torah, and the secrets of the person, and they can help attach one to the other, our nation will be redeemed from between the straits. We need to arm ourselves and to know, the reason behind everything that we're doing. Rav Kook's syllabus, if you would, that was made by the Nazir HaKadosh, as Talmud Rabbi David Cohen, that it started with a thorough understanding of the Rishonim and their understandings, and then from there into Sisrei Torah. From there into the Midrashim to the Rishonim, and then into Sisrei Torah, to build a whole wide, broad Talmud Chacham. And these Talmidei Chachamim would be able to address the needs of the generation in such a way. Why? Because we need depth. We're searching for depth. We're searching for meaningful experiences intellectually and emotionally. If we can watch any media, which then pulls on our heartstrings, the Torah should be able to do that too. And it does, when people can open it up for us in that such a way. But that's to meet the needs of the generation. Number three, and very nogia to the time we're living in, tshuva is a world force. Tshuva is not just, you're a bad boy, you be a good boy. You did a sin, do tshuva and fix it. Tshuva is a world force. He says in the introduction to the Orat HaTshuva, he said tshuva is shekol hatikvaot ishiot v'tziboria benuyim aleha. It is the cornerstone by which all hopes, both communal and personal, are based. Only tshuva, any hope that it can be better. It all depends on this evolving wave of tshuva. In the fourth parak of the Orat HaTshuva, also it's Kedaya to read it, where he talks about the fourth parak specifically keys in talking about this world force, that everything, whether as a corrective force within history, within economy, within science, everything through tshuva comes back and evolves and rises up. And then, most powerfully, to return to yourself as well. The estrangement and alienation of themselves. There's a beautiful piece in the Orot HaKodesh where he talks about Vani b'toch ha-gola, an I and an exile. The I, the essential I, am estranged from myself. And as a result, I can't answer HaKadosh Baruch Hu's question to me, Ayeka, where are you? And what happens is that consistently throughout our history, we consistently make the mistake of running away from ourselves. Running away from ourselves on the night of the Chanukah Tabayit. Running away from ourselves and all the times when Chazal say, if only this would have happened, then Mashiach would have come, right? Ever wonder what the purpose of those Gemarot is? Play what if, right? What do you need to tell us what if? To tell us the invested potential of the moment so that we should learn how to turn around and face God. That's why his Talmid, Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap, has a beautiful, beautiful essay in the Meimarim, on Ori V'Yishi, where he says the entire idea, Lifnei Hashem Titaru, the idea of Lifnei Hashem Titaru, Rav says it also in that same book by Dr. Lustiger, before Hashem be purified, be before Hashem, live Lifnei Hashem, turn and face Hashem, and turn and face yourself. And what happens, unfortunately, though, is that our expert teachers come and teach us, and don't teach us to hone in on ourselves. They put the focus outside. And the I, the eternal I, decreases, and it goes away. And if there is no I, there's no you, and there's definitely no him. Ruach apenu Mashiach Hashem, the breath of our soul, the breath of our lungs. Mashiach is called the breath of our lungs. Why? He's that breath of fresh air. As he can return with even the air within ourselves to becoming ourselves. To rediscover who we are. Right? That's why he's called Ruach Apenu Mashiach Hashem. Hashem, the Mashiach, is the one who returns our breath. There's nothing as dear to us, as close to us, as our own breath. To return to ourselves. And therefore also, number four is the power to believe in ourselves. A beautiful sefer that was put together from one of the Talmidim in Ramat Gan.
Muscat.
Yesh Lecha Kanfei Ruach, the entire sefer of the power of the belief in yourself in Rav Kook's teaching. There's a lot of it, you can see. There's a lot of it. In fact, it's very funny. I number one, Rabbi Weinberger told me that if you don't buy this one, you're missing the point of it all. That's what he said to me.
He gave shir on it for a few years here.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
2 years he was giving shir on it.
He told me they were missing the point of it all. And then I was sitting learning it in the shul, and someone from Ramat Gan was coming to Rabbi Weinberger to hand him a copy of the Sefer. I said, I think he already has it, but go ahead. He likes more books anyway. He always likes more books. But to believe it, believe in the power of yourself. And not only that, he opens in Musar Avicha, he says that you will not exempt yourself from your obligation until you write your own Musar Sefer, by learning yourself. And incidentally, that's why also he said that he would learn Orot HaTshuva every Elul that he himself wrote. And he would see new things in it. Because there's so much out. When we say that our souls are deep, and we are deep, and our souls are the Otiot HaTorah, as Rav Moshe Wolfson Shlita, should be well, says all the time. This isn't just like a fluffy language. This isn't like a metaphor. Within ourselves is something very, very deep. Within ourselves is Torah. Rav Schechter says, "I said Chalkina b'Sar Secha," right? As Vardy, he says all the time, it's one of the powerful. There's so much. We have Torah inside of us, and when we discover it, that's part of the Yibana Beit HaMikdash. The Mikdash will only be rebuilt when we can discover the Torah inside of ourselves. And he says in another place that the Adam HaYashar Chayav LaHamin Ba Chayav HaYashar. A person has to believe in, as they would say in Yiddish, their Gutzkeit. And how good and special they are in themselves. We need to believe in ourselves. And it's probably even harder than believing in Hashem. Is to believe in ourselves. At the same time, on one level we're torn. We're torn between many different worlds. We live in many, many different worlds. We live in the world of modernity and the world of the Torah, you know, thousands of years back. We live in the world of the Litaim and the Hasidim. We live, you know, we live in the world between Chesed and Gvura. We live in so many different worlds. So what happened was is that Brenner, Yosef Chaim Brenner, one of the great Hebraist writers of the time, said about Rav Kook's essays. He liked Rav Kook's essays, although he disagreed with Rav Kook's attack in it, although he came around. But he said, you think you're this like very, very big believing rabbi. I'm telling about you, Ataish Karua. You're really a torn rabbi. You can't make up your mind. And he said later, Rav Kook said to Azar, one of the more sympathetic Hebraist writers who records this maase, that Achen Diber Hahu. He said, well, Sha'omri Malai Shani Anochi Ish Karua, that I am a torn person. Because how is it possible that any of us are not torn people? But when we make sense of our lives, all the desperate parts, of all the different pieces that we're made up of, this is what the Mekubalim refer to as tikkunim, as yichudim. When we take the parts of our lives that are confusing, when we can put it together, it is the most pristine revelation of God's unity in the world. My ups, how do I make sense of the ups and downs of my life? Right? So here there is God and here there isn't God. We know that Rabbi Nachman, the sixth Torah, the idea of a person needs to be an expert in halacha, an expert in running and an expert in returning. Or better for us, we'd express it, an expert in running and an expert in tripping, right? I'm the best person who trips, right? You'll land, but I can get back up, right? I trip and I know how to deal with it, then I trip. I know how to run and I know how to fall. And you say, well, the running, okay, that's what God wanted. But when I trip and fall, that's what God wanted too? Yeah. And when I can put that all together as the story of my life, Azamra lo kai biyodi, then I'll sing to God with the song of my life. Rav Kook says this is the most sublime expression that God really runs the world. Because it's not God only runs the world on my good days, but God runs the world on my bad days too. So those are our five key Torahs from Rav Kook. Of course, there's many, many more. Eretz Yisrael is not just simply a piece of land, but as Rav Moshe Wolfson says consistently throughout the Sefer, that it's the land of our soul. It's the land where we are the people that represents the concept that the land represents also. Person, place, time, as he says all the time. Person, place, time. We are tied to Eretz Yisrael, not just as an acquisition, not just as rescue Zionism, not just, you know, people shouldn't bother us. But it's the root of our souls. many, many other things. So let me just give you five different book lists, reading lists. Thank you for things if you want to get a little bit more into Rav Kook. Number one, Orta Tshuva is very, very key. Nowadays, there's a million translations, so it'd be very, very helpful.
But the best one is. The best one is Song of Tshuva.
Absolutely.
Very, very shaykh to Elul.
Absolutely.
Shoplifted, get it online, whatever you have to do. It's shaykh to get. Do you have it up here?
Yeah.
Yeah, at least a couple of them, I think.
Okay, wow.
That's number one. Number two, the letters. The letters were written to real people. And as a result, they're written in a language which is easy to understand. So to learn the Igrot Raya, however you want to say it, to learn the letters, it's very, very clear. And he's showing you how he's teaching in a clear way to everybody, not just his thoughts. A lot of the Sfarim are made of his journals, and the journals he wrote for himself, and then he said, yeah, you should publish it. But these are written in a much, much more concise and easy way to understand the Lashon Haraf. This is a treasure, and you really can't find it in print. They probably have it in the library, but you also can get it on the Otzar HaChachma. And Otzar HaChachma, you can see a couple of pages at a time, it's all you need. These are the Rav Kook's Jew haikus throughout the year, 3 pitgamim every month. You can really get a handle of some of Rav Kook's big thoughts and how they apply to it, so you always have a good vart to say in Rosh Chodesh. Also very key. Good, have a bunch of good vart left to say in Rosh Chodesh. Yeah, you're good to go. Little book, very powerful. You'll find it on the Otzar HaChachma. That's the Be'er Megid Yerachim. Megid Yerachim is 2 pages in one book, but the Be'er makes it into like 150 pages. Pretty easy reading. If there's any questions, I'm around every day. You can ask me. Ein Aya is a beautiful parish on the Agadot in the style very much of the way of the Maral. So if you can understand the Maral's Hebrew, and that touches you, and you like Agadot, that could be a way in. And finally, the Ikvei Atzon. The Ikvei Atzon are written as a series of letters to both the old Yishuv and the new Yishuv, trying to bring them together, trying to bring the people, the Chalutzim, maybe we say the ultra-Orthodox, the religious, I don't know what you would call them, but the old Yishuv and the new Yishuv together, to see the goodness that both of them has, and his vision for a whole Judaism, a big Judaism. So it's the Ikvei Hatzon. The Hador is the introductory letter. So Metz Hashem, like we said, the merit of the Tzaddik, the Torah of the Tzaddik, should not only protect us and be merely Tzosha, but it should also be a guide for us into the future, so that we'll, Emirat Hashem, have the merit to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu. Rav Kook will definitely be there too, I'm sure. Definitely taking his turn as the Kohen Gadol. Although he said he'd be fine to be a regular Kohen, but we'll see him, the Kohen Gadol, along with all the rest of the Tzidkenu. Their merit should protect us, and we should learn their ways. Thank you also for coming.